G-minus 86, Gravesen Hotel, Buenos Aires, Argentina. Only a few miles from the current focal point of the world's attention, the ICA building in downtown Buenos Aires, British Prime Minister John Cole sat with a scowl on his face and a scheme brewing in his mind. He was alone, as he so often was these days, watching events unfold from a safe distance and putting the final touches on his plan for hijacking William Godfrey's inauguration speech. As he would have on a close-run election night, Cole had multiple variants of his planned speech ready to go. Each was an interjection speech rather than a victory of concession speech, and which one he would call upon depended entirely on what Godfrey said from his podium.
"It didn't have to be like this," Cole seethed through gritted teeth as Godfrey's face filled the ACN bulletin once more. "We could have been in it together."
Few 21st century political relationships had been as stormy as Cole and Godfrey's, with the former having initially risen to prominence purely by ingratiating himself to the latter and backing his reaction to Dan McCarthy's IDA leak when the rest of the world was laughing at the young American's supposed craziness. By hitching their cart to the right wagon, out of desperation rather than any calculated strategy, Godfrey and Cole saw their stock rise just as President Slater's plummeted. Godfrey was thus able to ascend to the chairmanship of the nascent Global Shield Commission, leaving the path to number 10 absolutely clear for Cole. With Godfrey's support, he was a made man, and for a short period, things were rosy in the garden. Since then, however, the two had clashed repeatedly. During a slow period for contact-related matters, Godfrey briefly returned to London after Cole was forced to resign in disgrace following his misjudged partnership with the universally detested Jack Neill. Godfrey went on to abdicate his prime ministerial role for an unprecedented second time when a better offer came up at the Global Contact Commission, and it was there that he found himself in direct opposition to Cole when his former understudy opted to engage with a rival organization, the China-led Earth Liaison Forum. Cole's position as the ELF's Western director was generally met with shrugs and eye rolls, but Godfrey took it as the personal provocation it was. Cole restored his reputation significantly by making a surprisingly reasonable decision to covertly work against Jack Neill and the hostile alien squadron the latter tried to use for his own means when their craft touched down in Havana, and since then had returned to frontline politics in the UK, where he eased his way back into the job with help from the ever-powerful Godfrey. Ever since then, the roller coaster ride of ups and downs looked to have settled into a relatively gentle stretch of cooperative coexistence between the two most internationally significant British politicians since Winston Churchill. In the mind of one of those men, however, the relationship had recently soured all over again and was now decisively unsalvageable. For John Cole, a short-tempered and spiteful individual known more for picking fights than seeking conciliation, Godfrey's recent actions were as unforgivable as they were deserving of a harsh and swift response. Cole looked back with fury at the countless hours he'd spent in the past year politicking on behalf of Godfrey in their joint plan for the wholly independent Interspace Contact Agency, as whose inaugural chairman Godfrey was now just hours away from being sworn in. Cole had worked harder than anyone to apply pressure on holdout governments who didn't like the sound of the proposed ICA's breakaway from the well-established UN framework in which it initially operated, and all along he had hoped and expected to be rewarded with a meaningful title. He knew better than to ask, and would have had far too much pride to do so even if he didn't, and some of the few advisors Cole still trusted did get through when they explained to him that initial governments who supported the ICA's creation had granted their assent on the understanding that its leadership would be identical to that of its UN-based predecessor. This meant Ding Xiang and Valerie Slater would sit as deputy planetary liaisons, with Dan McCarthy as chief planetary liaison, and Tara Ford his assistant planetary liaison. The only change was that Godfrey would ascend to the new position of chairman, which many saw as a welcome source of stability. With Dan and Tara having made no secret of their shared desire to step back from active duty as anything but unifying figureheads to the greatest possible extent, a steady and experienced hand like Godfrey was seen as just the ticket. Godfrey's perceived position as a balancing figure of personal neutrality between Slater and Ding, the leaders of the world's two economically competitive superpowers, further added to his draw in the eyes of his many supporters. Godfrey's storied history with the McCarthys, and particularly the relative esteem Dan had for him over every other politician he'd dealt with, was in essence the icing on the cake. Today, however, John Cole wanted nothing more than to poison that cake and stand over the political corpses of all who gluttonously feasted upon it at their masturbatory inauguration ceremony. All the while he had been helping Godfrey to bring about this day, Cole had also been scheming to undermine the individual he saw as the weak link at the new ICA's top table, U.S. President Valerie Slater. His great personal dislike for her may have clouded his view as to how easy she would be to sufficiently slander, but it certainly seemed likely that it would be easier to rid the agency of Slater's presence than that of the untouchable Dan McCarthy and Tara Ford. Waiting long enough for Godfrey to be able to simply add a new deputy without too much controversy wasn't something Cole had ever been willing to do. The time frame of 2 or 3 years was patently ridiculous, at least to his altogether biased mind. And recent events now left Cole doubting that Godfrey would ever hold up his end of the bargain, even if no destabilizing events rendered it impossible in the meantime. The greatest slight of all, one which Cole had taken great care not to let Godfrey know had hurt him at all, let alone as much as it had, came some 3 weeks earlier, when the human crew on New Kerguelen made their return to Earth with the news of a startling discovery. That John Cole learned of the crew's return from one of his own sources in Beijing, rather than from Godfrey, his supposed close ally and confidant, was a sickening blow to the proud man's ego, as well as a thumb in the eye for all his hard work. When word leaked out about the alien world's second shelter and Cole learned of it with a camera in his face, several minutes after the general public, given that he had just emerged from an unrelated cabinet meeting, his embarrassment was complete. Worst of all, President Slater issued a clearly rehearsed video statement on the news within moments of Cole's bumbling and widely mocked impromptu response. The contrast in the perceived professionalism of their respective responses made Cole look foolish to the general public, but he was troubled most by the clear implication that few others seemed to either notice or care about. The speed of Slater's carefully stage-managed response evidently reflected the reality that she had been in on the secret discovery of the second shelter while he had been kept in the dark by his supposed friend in the form of ICA Chairman Godfrey. Neglecting to bring Cole in on news of the crew's return as soon as it occurred was one thing, and was to an extent forgivable in the urgency of a rapidly developing situation. But with several days having passed between the crew's return and the moment when one member of the team anonymously leaked details of their discovery to the press, it was impossible for Cole to accept that Godfrey had done anything other than consciously and deliberately keep him out of the loop. Personally, even more so than professionally, John Cole could simply not allow this to stand. Disrespect could never go unanswered, as Godfrey himself had ironically impressed upon Cole during their early time together in London, and disrespect on this level quite simply had to be met with an appropriately damaging counterattack. Counterattack was a fair word for Cole, because he truly felt as though his honor had been attacked, besmirched, and, as he told his few remaining confidants, shat upon by Godfrey. When Godfrey's smug face finally left the TV screen, Cole let out a long sigh. He glanced towards the room service menu on his bedside table and reached over until the ACN anchor's words stopped him in his tracks. "We'll head down to Buenos Aires now," the man said, "where our very own Jenna Clark is following the huge march in support of Dan McCarthy and his ICA's visions of cooperative contact with the messengers from New Kerguelen. We're being told that the huge crowd will very soon be passing the city's iconic Gravesen Hotel, scene of President Slater's close call with the Geosovs, of course, and also the same building where Clark McCarthy and William Godfrey lay low after their own close call with the gunmen far more recently."
A snake-like smile spread across John Cole's face, and within no more than 30 seconds, his hefty frame was off the bed, and his shoes and coat were on.